world, you know, needing healing.
And how did you get into what you're doing now? Like, what led you to, like, for your heart to be, want to help people and to help people find healing who've experienced, you know, sexual assault?
There's probably not one thing that I can point to. Well, there is one thing. So obviously we all know that it all points up to God, right? You know, when God decides you're going to do something, he can be pretty persistent.
Knock and, a few times on the door.
Yeah, exactly. But I think probably where it maybe very first initiated was my background in the Speakers Bureau for the Catholic Pro-Life community. I was director of the Speakers Bureau for 25 years. And one of the presentations we did was on sins against our sexuality. And when I saw all of the statistics, and after years of doing chastity talks and presentations on sexuality, and it was just incredible after how many presentations somebody would come up to me and say something along the lines of, I know somebody who was assaulted. Or I even had one young girl say, I mean, I knew she was trying to tell me what happened, but she couldn't find the words. And anyway, so through that, I think that started my heart in the direction of wanting to help people who have had some kind of sexual abuse or assault in their background. And then God just kind of took it from there.
Mm. As he often does.
So, yes.
Puts all the pieces together. And I should mention the co-founder and the director of ministries is Bernice Simmons. We've had her on several times as well. Yeah. Were you all, did you know each other before at this point when you were having this on your heart? And how did that relationship and then unfold into Dawn of Mercy?
Bernice was one of my speakers from the Speakers Bureau, and I probably knew her probably 20 years of the Speakers Bureau because she was, you know, towards the beginning. So I knew her. I knew her background. I knew what a great job she did, and she was a licensed professional counselor. I am not a licensed professional counselor. I have no counseling in my background other than being an engineering manager.
I'm just basically counseling, I think, right?
A lot of times it actually is, yes. But so my background has nothing to do with this. So I knew I needed somebody who had that background. Mm. So Bernice, she was the very first person that I called when I felt the call to do this. And Bernice is so busy. She gets called by everybody to do everything because she is. She's very good. And I called her. I said, I'm going to call her anyway. And I'm waiting for her to say, you know, I just have too much on my plate. I just can't do it. So I call her. There's this silence on the phone. And she goes, I have had that on my heart too. Yes, I will help you. So I think God was, you know, working in a couple different ways, but yes, immediately. And we just started right out then and started putting it together.
I have been curious, the name Dawn of Mercy, first off, it's a beautiful name, but who came up with it and what was the inspiration behind it? Because I think you could look at it and interpret it a few different ways.
You know, I can't, there's really... We just brainstormed, and I couldn't even tell you. We knew there was going to be dawn in it somehow, and I don't know why. And then we just tried to think of all these words that would go with dawn. Mm. And I think dawn was just more because it was kind of a beginning. Because when I did research to see, I didn't want to start this ministry, and there's 50,000 others out there. You know, there was no reason for me to start it.
Sure.
And there were none or very few that really did focus on sexual abuse and sexual assault. Many for sex trafficking, many for domestic abuse, many for many other kinds of abuse, but not focused on sexual abuse and sexual assault. And so that's where the dawn came from. And then we just kept thinking of words, and mercy probably came because Saint Faustina also had a hand in this. Mm. I know it sounds weird, but you know, there's so many things that feed us in our life,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so Saint Faustina, and she of course is Divine Mercy. Mm. And so that's where Divine Mercy came from.
Mm, that's awesome. Yeah, I've always thought that kind of like you said, dawn being like the beginning,
right.
or also like the brightness at the beginning of the
right.
day, you know, you're seeing the light of healing. So I think it's really beautiful. And what year did you all officially, you know, become a group and, you know, I don't know what the right word is. Incorporate is not the right word. As a nonprofit.
Yeah, it is.
Is incorporate?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we incorporate. And in fact, we did our incorporation on the feast day of St. Faustina.
Oh, wonderful.
Because and I can't even remember how she came into it, but she did. And it was, so we incorporated on her feast day. And it was back in 2020.
Mm.
And we actually, Bernice and I actually started working on the concept before that, a couple years before that. So I'm going to say probably about 2018. It took us a bit to put it all together. You don't write a 3-day retreat in a week or 2 weeks. I mean, it took us about a year to put the retreat together.
Mm. And I want to talk more specifically about the retreats and how they work. But I want to introduce Beth here in just a moment. But maybe if you could just set it up, Sherry, you mentioned that you started just hearing statistics about people who've experienced sexual abuse or assault.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any, like, you know, something you can share with us so that people understand how widespread and how many people are affected by this?
So 1 in 3 women. So there are 3 women here in this room, right?
Yeah.
So that's a small group. So 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men. Which most people forget about the men.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say forget about. They don't think about the men because they don't think about men as being sexually abused or even assaulted.
Sure.
But 1 in 4, that's a pretty big number.
That's not that much different.
Yeah, no, it is not.
Yeah.
And so the statistics are really very, very high.
Mm. And now I'd like to introduce Beth, who has someone who has who heard about the Dawn of Mercy retreat, went on it, and has very kindly agreed to come in today and they share a little bit about her experience. Beth, thank you so much for being here first off. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to be here.
So first off, can you just tell me a little bit about your background, whatever you'd like to share about and then how you came to hear about Dawn of Mercy and decided this is something you needed to take part in?
Yes. Yeah. So I was experiencing a lot of PTSD and depression, anxiety, and I had to take FMLA, leave of absence from work. And when I was driving the car, it was the first day, I think, that I took off. I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I knew that I needed something. And I was listening to Guadalupe Radio, and Dawn of Mercy had an ad, and they were talking about a retreat that was that weekend. And I called from there and made an appointment. But this was a year after I had broken up with a boyfriend at the time. And I did not know it, but I had felt like there was manipulation that happened and sexual abuse. And when I was, when I took off work and said, okay, something's wrong with me, at the time, I still felt like it was my fault what happened. So there was a lot of shame, a lot of hiding from me because I couldn't see that there was something to look at, something to heal. And so it was more of, I felt this nudge to call and I felt this, okay, I think this is what I need, even though truly everything in me felt once I get there, they're going to find out that I'm a fraud.
Mm.
So I had that going most of the time in my head, but I was so at a point of desperation that I was like, okay, I'll try it. And worst case, they kick me out. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you know. So that was like a little bit of why I started the retreat.
Mm. But we didn't kick you out.
I know.
Spoiler, she did not get kicked out.
Yeah.
I mean, how amazing, though, that, you know, kind of Sherry mentioned that it often takes us many times to hear that information before processing that maybe we need to do it, that God clearly just had you tuning into the radio station at the right time and have it on your heart to just be like, maybe I need, that's what I need.
Yep.
And so you were able to attend one of the Dawn of Mercy retreat weekends. And Sherry, can you just kind of give us an idea of what that looks like for a retreatant? And maybe again, just a brief overview of who that is for, men, women, you know, who it's for.
We do separate groups, so we never have men and women together. So for the women's retreat, we use sound psychological methods because they're hurting and they have been through trauma, and that's when you said you felt PTSD. That's exactly what it is. It is PTSD. You have suffered a trauma. Mm-hmm. So we use psychological methods. We use spiritual being the Bible, scriptural imagery, the Blessed Mother. We are Catholic. Now, you don't have to be Catholic to attend. Beth, I don't believe you were Catholic.
I was. I had just converted
you
to the faith.
Okay.
And what I do want to say is mm-hmm. that it was important that for me at that time that it was Catholic, because Mary was a huge part mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. my healing process.
Very mm-hmm. Yes, we definitely use the Blessed Mother. But you do not have to be Catholic to attend. And we do not in any way try to convert anybody to Catholicism. That is not our purpose there. Our purpose is to help with the healing. So we use psychological method, that sound mental health practices, spiritual being God, Jesus, the Blessed Mother. And then there's just something about being in a group of people who have experienced, I won't say the same. Nobody is ever the same. No story is ever the same. Mm. But similar experiences. Beth, did you feel that was important, that there were people there who have experienced a similar?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I feel like the devil just lies to us, and we get caught in this isolation and fear and doubt and shame. And with any healing, being around other people who have experienced similar things, are going through the same thing, is healing to hear, and then it's healing to speak and share your own story. And that's how God designed us, to be part of a community and of people helping each other along the way.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have a 10-week healing program, which kind of focuses more on the present, what's happening in your life right now, the triggers that you're experiencing, as Beth said, the shame, the guilt, things that maybe do not really belong to you, but you don't know that. Mm-hmm. And so the 10-week program, which is online, it's one evening a week for 2 hours, so it's not like you don't go somewhere for 10 weeks, but it's one evening a week for 2 hours. And that focuses more on the here and now. And then the retreat, that is more of it's like a safe environment to be able to tell your story mm. and to discover who you really are beyond that trauma mm. and bringing God. Some people have left God because they're like, how could you let this happen? Many others have formed a stronger relationship with God, but it's a way to bring God into your life, into a very loving, in a very safe and loving environment, in order to bring the healing.
We're talking about Dawn of Mercy and the beautiful work that they do. Have a healing retreat for those who have experienced sexual abuse or assault. It's going to be August 22nd through 24th is the next one. You can go to their website, dawnofmercy.org, dawnofmercy.org, to register for that. And they also have that 10-week healing group starting. For English, it'll be starting on September 7th, and Spanish, September 14th. And that's 10 weeks. It's virtual. So no matter where you are, you can join in on that. Sherry, do you find that like people usually will want to go to the retreat and then do the 10 weeks, or do they do them kind of concurrently, or is there any particular order you want that to happen in?
It depends on each person. And we have a counselor that will talk to each person. Bernice is generally the counselor that talks to this English. Then we have another counselor that will talk to people in Spanish, and they can help determine what is necessary. You might need that healing group. You might need the here and now, because you're really struggling with life right now. So you might need that healing group before you can really get the benefit out of the retreat. Mm-hmm. And it could be that you're ready for the retreat, but you still need help with your day to day, and so then you can do the healing group. So I don't have a
So it could be any way.
Yeah,
whatever works best for the person.
Answer. And sometimes we might actually determine that a person needs counseling before they're ready for either. So we're going to do what's best for the person. This is not just about getting people into our retreats or into our healing group. I mean, we are going to do what's best for the person.
It's working very much on an individual basis,
yes,
which, like you kind of said, that no two of these stories are going to be the same.
Right.
And Beth is joining us here, who is someone who has attended one of the healing retreats with Dawn of Mercy. And you did thought you were going to get kicked out because you had the doubt of, am I even supposed to be here? Am I, as, you know, of course, because the devil's playing games in your mind. At what point on the retreat did you realize you were you were not going to get kicked out? Did you have that fear go away? And at what point did you really realize this is exactly what God needed to? Or did you realize that on the retreat, or did it take time after?
There were several points during the retreat that I felt like, okay, this is for me, even though so much in me was like, you know, obsessing over just the fear aspect of doing something I'm not supposed to be doing, being somewhere I'm not supposed to be. But I had women speak into me who I started to have some kind of panic just because these are such sensitive things, and so I had some stuff come up, and the love that I received, that I was able to receive from a licensed counselor, from women who are you know, there for a reason to stand and be there and listen to our stories and be there when you know, I had felt like I, you know, just feeling that unbalance. So, so that was healing. And then also having, again, I mentioned I was a new Catholic, and at the time I actually, Jesus, I felt very distant from Jesus the man because of what happened and just my distrust of men. And so for me, on a spiritual level, this was a unique retreat for me because it was, it did have, bring Our Lady into the healing. And, that was new for me because I was new to being Catholic. And, but then, you know, I wasn't trusting Jesus, then here comes Mary. She steps in. So that was really healing for me. And then, without disclosing too much about the retreat, just, the verse, I don't remember where it is, but it's about Moses and the, Israelites and the snake on the stick, the bronze snake, and Jesus referring to the snake and how, you know, you have to look at the pain, look at the snake in order to be healed. And that was part of my healing process. And all the women there, was it took bravery to be there. It took bravery to speak. It took bravery to really look at the pain and feel the pain and walk through it and let yourself be healed, whether it's through another person on the retreat, a friend, anybody, just opening yourself up for healing. And, you know, it's not easy, but 100% worth it. Because, again, at the time, I did not know God wanted me to be happy. I did not know there was happiness or joy to be had. The retreat was really, really meaningful to me. And then I ended up doing the 10-week after that.
That's awesome.
So the scripture that she's referring to is when the Israelites were wandering in the desert after they had come out of Egypt, and there were the snakes in the desert, and they were biting the people. And so Moses went to God, and God said, well, take one of the snakes and put it on a stick and hold it up for them to see. And so you'd be kind of like, well,
what are we doing here?
Yeah, why do you have to put the snake on the stick? And why do they need to see? Because you need to see what is hurting you in order to heal. And so that we use that scripture to bring out the point. So that was really good that you brought that up, because and it's fine to tell what's in the routine, because once, if you've been assaulted, any kind of trauma, any kind of trauma, you shove it down inside. You don't want to address it. You don't want to look at it. You cannot heal if you keep it inside. Mm-hmm. And so this is, we use that as an example of God wants us to look at what's hurting us. And once we do, it's like once you say something, something is really eating at you, and then you say it out loud, and then, oh my, I feel a little better, mm-hmm. right? So it's the same thing. So that's the scripture that she was referring to.
That's really beautiful. I would not even have thought about that, but that's such a good thing for healing.
I have to give Bernice credit. It was Bernice who brought that
that's
into
amazing.
The retreat.
I'm
yes.
not surprised. Yes. That's awesome. We're in our final couple of minutes here with the wonderful women from Dawn of Mercy, Sherry Havlik, the founder and president, and Beth, who attended one of the healing retreats. Sherry, do you want to just go over that there's an upcoming retreat and give some information about that, how people can register, maybe any information they should know, and also those healing sessions that are starting in September as well?
So the retreat is August 22 to 24, and it is a three-day retreat. It will start Friday morning about 10 o'clock, starts Friday morning, and it goes through Sunday afternoon. So yes, you might have to take a day off of work or a half a day off, but it is a three-day retreat. And you stay there. It is in the Dallas area. You stay there overnight each of the nights. You don't come and go. It's a wonderful retreat, though. It's just beautiful. And then the 10-week healing program, the English starts September 7th. That is 10 weeks, 2 hours an evening, one evening a week. Generally, it's a Monday or a Wednesday, one or the other. Two hours a week for 10 weeks. And, you know, I know that it's hard for people to say that this has happened. It's hard to pick up that phone, to send that email. Just the best I can say is, you know, just do it, because it will help in the end. And I know Beth can kind of speak to that even better. But the phone number is 469-613-3296. Website, you can go to the website dawnofmercy.org and send us a message from there. You can go to the contact us page and we'll respond as quickly as we can. The retreat is $295. The healing group is $150. But I do want to say that we do have scholarships. We do not let money keep somebody from going to our programs. Mm-hmm. The money helps us to pay for the programs, but please don't let that stand in the way. And even if you have not been assaulted or abused, I'm going to say probably 99% of the people know someone who has. So help your friends.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I think everyone should have the name Dawn of Mercy in their pocket, basically. They need right. to be able to have that to share with a friend or family member that may have experienced some form of abuse. Beth, just I wonder if you might be able to leave everyone who might be listening, who maybe they're hearing this information first time, maybe the third time, and they're in need of healing, maybe just a word of encouragement to pick up the phone or go onto the website and sign up for this upcoming retreat on August 22nd.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, as I said before, when we're stuck in isolation and fear, it's so hard to see any good or see any hope. And telling at least one person and calling, even calling just to have a chat and just say, hey, this is my story. Like, what do you think? I think is really important. And, you know, I had obsessed online for a while to try to figure out what happened to me. Let me try to figure it out. Oh, if it's not illegal, if it's not written in the law, then it means it's not bad. And that's not true. And so part of that was just me just like being honest and just saying, hey, this is what's going on. I need help. And then go from there, because God loves you and wants healing and joy and happiness for your life.
Mm-hmm. And Sherry, before I let you go, if you have any final words that you want to add, but also maybe if you have any requests from anyone listening who any particular prayers or if there's any way that we can help support this beautiful ministry, if there's anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Yes, prayers are always needed, especially during retreat hours, but also as we approach the retreat, just pray that give women the courage to call. And pray for men as well, because it's hard for us as women to talk about this, but it's even harder for men. So please pray for those men that they can come forward. How will we ever stop the ongoing of this if we don't start the healing now?
Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Or if not, thank you both so much for coming in today. Dawn of Mercy, again, is the name of this wonderful organization. Dawnofmercy.org is the website. That's where you can sign up for the upcoming retreat, August 22nd through 24th. And also the virtual healing groups that'll be starting September 7th for the English for 10 weeks and September 14th in Spanish. So make sure that you look into this again, even if you're not the one who needs the healing. Look it up so you have it. It's in your web history so that you know it. So that if you come across someone who does need this, because unfortunately the statistics say that you will, you probably have many times, someone who needs this. DawnofMercy.org is the website.
Send messages. Put it on your Facebook. We actually had somebody who came to us because a friend said, I just feel like I want to put this message out there. And she just sent it to like 10 of her friends. She had no idea. And she just sent it out to 10 of her friends to let them know about Dawn of Mercy. Mm. And it turned out that one of them called us.
Mm, that's a beautiful way. Right. Feel the impulse from the Holy Spirit and to take some action. Thank you so much, Sherry Havlick, founder and president of Dawn of Mercy. And of course, we want to thank Bernice Simmons, co-founder and director of ministries, who does a lot of work as well. And thank you, Beth, for coming on and being courageous and taking up the call and attending this retreat to start your healing journey, and also coming on and sharing a little bit with us to encourage other women and men to do the same.
You're welcome.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. This has been the North Texas Interview of the Week. I'm Cecil Anderson filling in for Dave Palmer today. If you have any suggestions for local interviews, let us know. You can send us an email to kath@grnonline.com. We're always looking for new interview ideas to keep you informed of what's going on in our Catholic circle here in North Texas. Until we speak again, have a great rest of your Saturday afternoon. God bless.
Welcome to this edition of the North Texas Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. We're broadcasting on KTH 910 AM in Dallas, KCPP 1140 AM in Fort Worth, and also on the GRN app that reaches to the entire world, along with our live stream at grnonline.com. My name is Dave Palmer. Cecil Anderson is running the board. And let me ask you something. Do you know the name Sister Wilhelmina? Okay, I hope I pronounced that right. Sister Wilhelmina is the subject of a movie called Incorruptible Movie, which is in the works right now. Hopefully will come out very soon. And I want to thank my dear friend Olivia Franklin, because she put me in touch with Ellen Holmes Steves LeBlanc, who is the consulting producer for this movie coming out. And then Ellen also put me in touch with Royce Hood, who is the director of the film. And I have both of them here on this interview to talk about who Sister is, what the project is all about, and a whole lot of other things. So delighted to have you both on with me. So Ellen and also Royce, thank you for your time today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
So, Ellen, let me start with you, because you are my first point of contact.
Sure.
What exactly is your role with Incorruptible Films, LLC? By the way, incorruptiblemovie.com is the website. How did you get involved in this, and what can you tell us about your own involvement?
I have known Royce for a little while. We've met through mutual friends over the years, and then I remember the day that I found out that they had found an incorrupt nun in Gower, Missouri, at an abbey. And I wanted to go, but I couldn't go because there were so many people that were flocking there because they couldn't believe that this nun had been in the ground 4 years and was still incorrupt, and her clothing had not deteriorated, even though it had gotten wet from the casket and she was never embalmed. And I was just like, this is amazing for America. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh. And then Royce and I had a conversation, and
I like to network and put people together. That's how I'm sitting here with you. And so I told Royce, I was like, you know, whatever I can do to help. Mm-hmm. I said, I would love to help promote this because I believe in it. I know how important it is. I mean, to have an incorrupt nun in America is a big deal. I mean, because I don't know that we've ever had another incorruptible. We have not, have we, Royce?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And so for me, I was like, Royce, whatever I can do. And he was like, okay, well, this is what we need to do. We're doing fundraising. He was in the process when we met of doing the filming at the Abbey, because he got exclusive rights to the filming from the abbess at the Benedictine Abbey in Gower, Missouri. He beat out all the other people that wanted access to this beautiful story.
It is a great story.
It is a beautiful story. And Royce will share his personal relationship with this because it's beautiful. And I said, let's do this. And I said, I'll help. And so I started coordinating different parishes and introducing it to different people and then connecting Royce with different people because, you know, everybody knows different people. And by the beauty of it, I'm sitting here with you, and then we're going to have presentations in the Dallas area this weekend,
good.
And then we'll be returning to Dallas probably sometime, hopefully over the summer, to do some more, and we're scheduled to go to Michigan and Ohio and North Carolina and Florida, and I'm working on quite a few different parishes in our country because the more people know, the more they can get involved. And right now we're in the final fundraising of trying to raise the last roughly $100,000 so that we can do the actual real life, you know, remakes of her life, the scenes, six or eight scenes. Royce has completed the beautiful filming at the Abbey for the docudrama, because it's technically a docudrama. And now an editing is beginning. And of course, you know, everything costs money, but getting this story out to the world, especially the American Catholic and Christians, is critically important because it's just amazing.
Yeah, well, thanks for that information. I want to turn to Royce Hood, director of this movie, Incorruptible Movie. Again, incorruptiblemovie.com is a website. And it is, Royce, I'm going to read a couple of sentences about Sister Wilhelmina and then ask you to fill in all the other blanks as much as you possibly can about her, because her life seems to be fascinating and more people, of course, every day are becoming more aware of her. Mary Wilhelmina Lancaster, OSB, was an African-American nun from rural Missouri who founded the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of Apostles. Her remains are a case of spontaneous mummification identified by the church as incorrupt upon exhuming in May 2023. She was previously a member of the Oblate Sisters of Providence. And so that's a little bit of information, but can you tell us more about her life and perhaps how you became involved in this as well, Royce?
Yeah, so Mary Elizabeth, as she was known prior to becoming a sister, was born in St. Louis. Her life is really, truly incredible. My wife and I were brainstorming some different things today about her story and just kind of putting together the pieces as we're entering the editing phase for the film. And so we were talking about this very subject. She grew up during segregation in St. Louis, and so her family was Catholic, and they would, if they went to a Catholic in a segregated community, they would be required to sit in the back of the church, for example. But that never bothered her. She asked her mom once, one of the scenes that we're going to be showing is called Back of Church. And she said something quite profound to her mother. She says, Mom, why do we have to sit in the back when we receive Jesus? And her mom answered her, what difference does it make when you receive Jesus first or last, if you're receiving Jesus? And moments like that really elevated young Mary Elizabeth to a person that didn't seek out the divisions in the world, didn't seek out conflict, but focused on the positive. And she was truly, I think, a glass half full person with respect to her faith in particular. Her entire life was truly centered on Christ. And there were a few moments. She knew as a young girl that she was going to be a sister. She, at her first communion, looked up and saw something amazing, and she heard the voice, "Will you be mine?" And it was Christ. And she was really shocked to find out that no one else, none of the other children, saw Jesus or heard Jesus in that moment. It was just her. And it really kind of baffled her a little bit. And she recounts, "He was so handsome, how could I say no?" And mind you, this is a young child hearing that calling. And I've heard other religious, not everybody hears elocutionist hears something, but some have. And it's just so, that mystical element is so important, such an important backdrop of this story. Years go by. She becomes a sister with the Oblites, as you mentioned. And there's a number of points in her life. They're very short, but I would consider them to be almost false starts, where she starts to go in a certain direction, getting involved in worldly matters, only to be brought back very quickly to that center, that order that her life was focused on, which of course was Christ. And as she got older, in the twilight of her life in the 70s, in her 70s, she decides that she wants to start an order, a community that is really embraces the traditions of the church, and in particular, the traditional habit. The Oblites at that time had largely retired the traditional habit. And this thing is sort of a woolish type material. It's uncomfortable. She found comfort in that discomfort. And to her, if it was too easy or too comfortable, it wasn't her vocation. And so she embraced the traditional habit, which takes us full circle. And there's a lot of pieces in between that I'm not sharing now. But when her body was discovered, one of the most remarkable things was the habit being completely intact. It's been told to us by experts that materials such as this, buried especially with a crack in the coffin and moisture in the coffin, would have disintegrated within a matter of 6 months to a year. It had been 4 years when her body was discovered, and the habit was perfectly intact along with her body, which is quite remarkable. What's interesting is the lining. There's some cloth lining in the casket itself that was completely disintegrated, as it should be, but not her, not her habit, which she cared so much about. So, I'm happy to share some other details with you as well. But her story, again, is really Christ-centered, which I think is going to really appeal to a broad group of people, especially with that sort of mystical element underneath it.
We're talking about a docudrama about Sister Wilhelmina. I have the director, Royce Hood, and also the consulting producer, Ellen Holmes, Steves LeBlanc, on with me. And Royce, I'm curious, Ellen mentioned how others were interested in this project, but you were chosen to be the director. Why do you think that was the case? What did they see in you, and why were you particularly interested in this project? I mean, obviously, from everything you've said, this is a fascinating woman, but how did you get the lucky straw, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard before, I don't want to presume this, but I've heard before that we don't always pick saints, they pick us. Of course, Sister Wilhelmina is not canonized right now, but I consider her to, out of everything I've learned, she's certainly, from my lay perspective, a saint in my book, although again, not confirmed by the church at this point. But I don't know, maybe she chose me. We, my wife and I had several years prior to discovering this project and hearing about Wilhelmina, had our sixth baby had something called Potter syndrome, where he had no kidneys and no bladder and no amniotic fluid, and his lungs weren't developing. And we discovered this at 22 weeks in utero. And we quickly learned that no matter what we tried to do to save this little guy's life, nothing would be possible. And so there was no medical reason for little Fulton, as we found out he was a boy, we named him Fulton. No reason for him to pass away in the womb. He would be perfectly fine, but when he was born, he would only live for a matter of minutes or hours. So during that pregnancy, we chose to really just embrace the gift of this child that was trusted to us for 9 months. And my wife came to a really amazing, beautiful, difficult determination. She said, you know, Fulton was not made for this world. And so we embraced that. Every single night, she would fall asleep, we'd say a rosary, and she'd play this beautiful Gregorian chant music and have the music near her womb so that the baby could hear this comforting music. And she said to me, I want him to know what heaven sounds like, because that's where he's destined for. And so fast forward, Fulton, by the way, interesting story, was stillborn on Good Friday. There was no medical reason for him to die in the womb whatsoever. So we got the miracle we needed, but not what we wanted. Fast forward a couple of years, that was 2021. When we heard the story of this nun, and we found out before the public found out, the story went viral very quickly. We heard the story of this nun that was found to be incorrupt. We drove and visited. And in that moment, when we saw her laying in state, she was just in the chapel at that time, and there's only a few people visiting and seeing her. And again, it was very quiet at that point. I realized the music that we had listened to every night was none other than the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles in Gower, Missouri. It was their music that we had listened to every single night during that pregnancy with Fulton. And it was quite beautiful. And when I saw her, I felt this instant feeling that I have to tell her story, not the story of incorruptibility. That is, of course, really cool and mysterious and neat, but I want to tell her story. And I said to her, Sister Wilhelmina, if it's God's will, I want to tell your story, your life, your faith, your family, where you come from, what you were interested in. Why was your vocation so important? Those are the things I want to focus on. If it's God's will, this will happen. A very short time later, the sisters and I spoke, and they gave me permission to share her story. And during this time, by the way, that when I got, we went back home, and I get a phone call after, it's about a 6-hour drive for us. Royce, can you come back this weekend? We expect the story's gone viral. We expect there's going to be 10,000 pilgrims and people coming to see her. We need you to come film everything. And so at that moment, I was involved with some other film projects, but all of our film crews were scattered and not organized. I had no equipment. I ran the Best Buy. I maxed out a Best Buy credit card to buy any gadget I could. I got there and I started filming the processions of people. And it went from a few dozen people to tens of thousands of people over the course of a week, coming from all walks of life, Catholics, non-Catholics, Christians, non-Christians, even some folks that looked like they were, you know, maybe even on the wrong side of theology completely, with pentagrams and things. We saw a few of those people. And one of them in particular, I'm just going to share this and I'll stop talking, but you're kind of keeping an eye on him. You know, what's this person's interest? All wearing all black and looked a little scary. He waited in line. People would kneel in front of Wilhelmina and touch objects to her. He got there and we were sort of keeping an eye on him. He all of a sudden knelt and started crying. Mm. Why do I share that? This guy that looked pretty scary was kneeling crying. Her life has had such a profound impact on so many people, and the discovery of her body continues to, I think, magnify her life. One last thought I'll leave you with before I let you speak again is one of the an abbot in Clear Creek, Oklahoma, said something profound, which I absolutely, one of my favorite movies, and the lines in the movie. He said she was so loud through her silence. Mm. I just love that. She was a contemplative nun who sang and did chores and remedial chores, but she was loud through her silence, and she continues to be.
Wow, thank you. No, I love hearing you talk. Your enthusiasm is just contagious about this. And Ellen, I want to come back to you. You mentioned $100,000 is really all that's needed to raise, to finish the movie. Mm-hmm. And you're also going out and you're doing these events at parishes. And so mm-hmm. what are you showing? The movie isn't finished yet.
Correct.
And so what is available now for parishes to screen? And also, what have you seen as the reaction to people who see this? Maybe folks like me who are not familiar with her, and others that maybe are, but what are they saying, and what still needs to be done?
They're all very curious, and the people that do know about it, they are like Lori's, gung-ho, you know, they want it to happen, they're donating money, you know what I mean, and it doesn't matter, $1 or $100, it doesn't matter, you know, they're mm-hmm. doing what they can, but, you know, everything costs money. So we go to the parishes. We did a beautiful presentation down in Orlando, Florida, last year, at a ordinariate parish, actually.
Yeah.
And it was, there's a Eucharistic miracle actually inside of that church, because it's a church that's been fire, arson twice, incarnation down in, Orlando. So it's amazing. But we did a beautiful presentation there, and the people were just so thirsty for, I think it gives hope. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think it gives people like, this is America. We don't have any incorruptibles. This doesn't happen. I mean, you know, we have Father Tolton, and we have, you know, of course, Mother Cabrini, and you know what I mean? And a lot of others, you know, but not as many as the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And so to have an incorruptible on American soil is very important to everyone. And like Roy said, all different walks of life, all different faiths, because it's so uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it, you know, yes, we're trying to raise, you know, it's going to cost money to do those scenes, which we need to do because they're so critical to the film. But we also are going to need money afterwards for promotion and getting it out. When people come to the events that we have, and we're going to be announcing more on the website, theincorruptiblemovie.com, You'll see Royce is very good about putting up where we're going to be doing presentations, and we're scheduling more. He's going to be in Tyler, Texas, actually, too. So he's in Dallas this weekend in Tyler, and then we're planning others for June and July, et cetera, in different states. But we're just trying to get the last of the funds raised so we can do the proper editing and do the proper filming and then get it out to the world. And I think, Royce, if I remember right, you had a couple of studios or something that were interested possibly in helping promote it as well, which is a blessing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The film is the reason, like, I could just go film it. We've got enough of the movie now that we could finish it as a documentary. And it'll be a feature-length film, which means it qualifies for a theatrical release. But her life is so incredibly beautiful. There's some very specific scenes from her life that we want to dramatize. And they can't be cheesy. They can't be low quality. They have to be Hollywood style, Hollywood quality, but better than that, because it's a holy film and she was such a holy person. And so we want the film to also, the contemplative life that these sisters live is so beautiful. I really want the film artistically to complement that life and to be as beautiful as that is. And so having the proper, as Ellen used the word proper, that's a key word. Having the proper team to help film a few of these remaining reenactments will give us what we need in editing. So we'll have interviews, we'll have beautiful contemplative footage from the abbeys and that we've been to and filmed at. And then we'll have some of these drama scenes spread out throughout the film to sort of take us back in time to these moments in Wilhelmina's life. And it's going to be gorgeous when it's done. It'll be an 88-minute long, slightly longer possibly, docudrama. And so, honestly, it's been such an interesting ride. There's been periods of time where there's so much happening around the film, and then period of time where it's like, okay, we're sort of just planning and strategizing what we're going to do next. This is sort of the last hoorah, I think, in terms of the funding part. There will be a new crowdfunding campaign being launched soon that will, I think, help us close whatever gap remains. And regardless of funds, if the Holy Spirit action plan is my business plan for this film, if we don't raise the ideal budget, you know, this is what we want. Sometimes God has other plans. Maybe we raise more than that and then we can do even bigger scenes. But if we raise less than that, we're still going to continue with the production and we'll get it done, just maybe scale back some. But I think the energy that I'm seeing behind folks when they hear about the story and they start to see some of the teasers that we have and some of the footage, it's amazing how people are coming together. So I'm very optimistic that we're going to hit our goal. And we're going to make a film that everybody's going to be really, really happy with at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And by the way, I just have to mention one thing. This is the sisters' movie. In the movie world, a lot of times when you license rights to a story, whoever licensed those rights, they get final cut. They have complete say. The way I structured this deal is they have final cut approval. So this film, we're going to
Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth, and North Texas on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Catholic radio for your soul. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.